Hey there. Brittany Trang is a reporter for Stat News. That's a healthcare news outlet. In fact, we talked with Brittany's colleague, Bob Herman, in our last episode. And like Bob, Brittany's been covering the business of healthcare. And for her, this story starts with Bob flagging a story to their team. He
dropped a link in the chat that said, like, hey, guys, I think we should write about this? And nobody replied.
This story was about a cyber attack against a company called Change Healthcare.
I was like, that sounds like a startup. And I was like, who cares about some sort of health tech startup?
But Bob kept bringing it up.
I finally clicked on the link and I was like, oh no, this is a big deal. This touches most of the American healthcare system.
Yeah, and it's no joke. Change Healthcare is what's called a data clearinghouse, and it's a big one. It's an important part of healthcare's financial plumbing. Somebody had gone in and basically hijacked their computer system and said, unless we get $22 million, we're not giving it back. So Change went offline and a huge chunk of the country's pharmacists, doctors, therapists, hospitals just stopped getting paid. And Change Healthcare stayed offline for weeks and weeks. And here's this other thing. Change Healthcare, you know, isn't a startup. It's been around for like 20 years. And in late 2022, Change got purchased by another company, a company that's starting to become a real recurring character on this show, United Health Group. You might remember, they are the country's biggest insurance company, and they've got their hands in just about every other part of healthcare in a big way. For instance, they are the very biggest employer of physicians in this country by a huge margin. They've got their own bank, which, among other things, offers payday loans to doctors. And they have a huge collection of companies that do back-end services. So in our last episode, we heard about Navi Health and how under United's ownership, insurance companies have been using Navi Health's algorithm to cut off care for people in nursing homes. Boy, yeah, that was a fun story. And as we've been learning, when one company like this gets so big, their problems, like the cyber attack, become everybody's problem. And in this case, everybody's problem seems to create an opportunity for United. Now, we'll break down how that could possibly work, but obviously, it does not seem like the way a lot of us would want things to work. And we'll end up talking about what we can maybe do about it. Not we, as in a bunch of individuals trying to tackle an opponent this big. I mean, good luck with that. But we, as in the we the people of the United States Constitution, we may already be on the case. This is An Arm and a Leg, a show about why healthcare costs so freaking much and what we can maybe do about it. I'm Dan Weissman, I'm a reporter, and I like a challenge. So our job on this show is to take one of the most enraging, terrifying, depressing parts of American life and bring you a show that's entertaining, empowering, and useful. And we will start with an attempt to answer what you would think might be a simple question. What does Change Healthcare actually do? Here's Brittany Trang from Stat News.
It's this kind of like Visa or MasterCard or something. Like when you go to the grocery store and you pay with a credit card, you are not putting your money directly into the pockets of the grocery store. There's a middleman in there. And Change is that middleman, but for a ton of different things.
Like, for instance, insurance claims. Brittany says hospitals and doctor's offices often don't submit claims directly to insurance companies. They send the claim to a middleman, like Change. And then Change figures out where that claim needs to go next. Like, I'm sending a bunch of mail, I put it all in one mailbox, and the post office figures out how to get it where it goes. Except, of course, there's no paper here, no envelopes, no physical packages. All those claims are basically data, which is why a company like Change is called a data clearinghouse. And even if a given provider uses some other clearinghouse, and of course there are others, Change may still be involved because insurance companies like Aetna also use Change as a place to collect claims from providers. So on that side, Change is like a post office box. But claims are just one of the types of data that Change handles. For instance,
when you went to the pharmacy counter or when you would check in at the doctor's office and they would take your insurance information and figure out like what you're going to pay for this visit, both of those processes were messed up.
Yeah, and there's more. prior authorizations, like when your doctor checks in advance to make sure your insurance company is okay with paying for whatever, those all go through companies like Change. So if Change is offline, are they going to do your MRI or surgery and just hope it doesn't get denied when Change comes back? And then once claims get approved, data for payments goes through Change too. So payments, a lot of payments just stopped going out. Here's Brittany again.
It's just kind of flabbergasting how big this is. This collapsed most of healthcare in some way or another.
Overall, the numbers are just wild. Change reportedly processes $1.5 trillion a year in claims, maybe a third of everything that happens in healthcare. According to the American Hospital Association, 94% of hospitals said they were affected by the outage. Some more than others. Not all providers use Change as their primary clearinghouse, but lots of them do. And for them, everything just stopped.
I talked to one provider. She's like, oh, I can talk. I'm here today and tomorrow before we close. And I was like, before we close for spring break? And she said, no, we have $3.13 left in our bank account.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
Brittany says that provider got a last-minute reprieve, an emergency loan from United. And there's been two or three rounds of these loans so far, plus some advance payments from Medicare. But as the outage has dragged on, started in February, and we're recording this 7 weeks later, it's hard to know if those are going to be enough. At the end of March, I talked with Emily Benson. She runs a therapy practice in a Minneapolis suburb, 8 clinicians, mostly treating kids. She says the practice does maybe $70,000 or $80,000 worth of business a month. In February?
Essentially, everything went dark for us.
United publicly acknowledged the Change hack on February 21st, but Emily Benson says she didn't actually get a heads up till almost a week later.
A lot of alarm bells went off. That was the end of the month. And so a lot of payments came due.
Her rent? Paychecks for her colleagues and herself?
I mean, I was in a panic. I didn't know where I was going to go.
She says she usually gets 2 payments a week from insurance with everything passing through Change. But this isn't just the payments from insurance, because Change also provides the documents that say how much any insurance company is going to pay for any given claim.
That's a critical document because that tells me what does the family owe us. And then the beneficiary is also going to get that information, so they're not surprised by what we charge them. So now every week we're stacking up and stacking up these amounts that the family's going to owe us.
By the time we talked, Emily Benson had gotten 2 loans from United, about $40,000 each, maybe a month's worth of billing for her between the 2 loans.
That first one was wiped out pretty quickly because now we're on week 5. And so I'm working on the second installment that I got from United. But, you know, that's half gone now, too. So I don't know what the next step is. We're nowhere near getting claims processing yet. And so I'm kind of panicking because it looks like the terms are within 45 days, you have to pay back that temporary loan. And how am I going to do that if I don't have claims coming in? So I'm still panicking.
I bet. You're very calm for somebody in this situation.
Well, you know, I've had a lot of therapy on my own. That's how you become a therapist. So panicking doesn't help anyone.
I guess I'll take that under advisement. So to pay back those loans, which are supposed to be repaid within 45 days, Emily Benson's going to have to start getting paid again. And as we spoke, she'd been living without systems for filing claims and getting paid for 5 weeks. And even when those systems get moving again, she's not going to see all that money right away.
Imagine the backlog and the clog of 5 weeks worth of insurance claims. I mean, we're looking at a major traffic jam.
And if everybody were to work double time for the next 5 weeks, then it would be 10 weeks. But people can't really work double time.
When you say that out loud, I don't feel as grounded.
I'm so sorry.
But it's probably realistic.
Other news outlets are talking to providers like Emily Benson all over the country. We're recording this in mid-April. United hasn't responded to our questions on this story, but their website says, "We're determined to make this right." It says they put out $4.7 billion in emergency loans to providers so far. And it says that for the vast majority of Change Healthcare's services, a restoration date is still pending. We have no idea what's going to happen, what it's going to mean for our doctors, our therapists, our local hospitals. And look, there are elements of this story that go beyond healthcare. Like how many of us have personal health information, maybe financial information that got seized by who the heck knows in this? And yes, United is getting some heat. They got a list of pointed questions from U.S. Representative Jamie Raskin. Their CEO is supposed to testify at a Senate hearing at the end of April. But as we'll get to in a minute, this disaster, United's disaster, could turn out to have a silver lining for United. An opportunity to keep on growing. And that opportunity arises precisely because United is so big and doing so much business in so many parts of the medical industrial complex, which does not sound great. It raises questions about, you know, the potential downsides for a lot of people when individual companies get this freaking big. And it raises questions about what we can maybe do about it. And the answer is maybe more than we think. That's all coming right up. This episode of An Arm and a Leg is produced in partnership with KFF Health News. That's a nonprofit newsroom covering healthcare in America. Their reporters do amazing work. We are honored to be in cahoots with them. So, as we've seen, a company like United is so big that their problems become everybody's problem. And at least in one case that I've seen so far, everybody's problem can become United's opportunity. That's what happened in Oregon. And a reporter from Washington, D.C. was in a position to make it a national story.
My name is Maureen Tasek, but you can call me Mo. And I am the investigations editor at the American Prospect and a senior fellow at the American Economic Liberties Project.
The Prospect is a politically progressive news magazine, and the Economic Liberties Project is a nonprofit that pushes an anti-monopoly agenda. So a lot of Mo's reporting looks at how financial behemoths are looking like monopolists, especially in healthcare. So
I have come to know United Healthcare pretty well over the past year or so.
Looking at, for instance, how they gobble up medical practices. As we mentioned, that kind of gobbling has made United the biggest employer of physicians in the country by huge margins in just the last few years. About one doc in 10 now works for them, either as employees or as affiliates. And as we've reported before, big players like United, like big hospital systems, and like private equity groups have been gobbling up medical practices for years. And that kind of consolidation, that kind of gobbling up, often leads to us paying more, and often for lousier healthcare. Now, Mo Tasek has been reporting on that kind of gobbling, and recently she had been looking at how the state of Oregon had been trying to slow it down. And then, in January 2024, a good-sized medical group in Corvallis, Oregon, said they were ready for United to gobble them up. The group is called the Corvallis Clinic. It's got more than 100 docs. But United and the clinic were going to have to go through a whole process to get approval from state regulators. And that process includes regulators asking the public for comments on the transaction. And in this case,
they were inundated with comments.
Yeah, like 378 of them in just a few weeks. And the comments were overwhelmingly against the sale. So in February, the regulators sent United and Corvallis a 5-page list of conditions under which they might approve a deal. And the conditions are like to not reduce service levels in the community for at least 10 years, to keep accepting non-United insurance, and to submit to a lot of monitoring. And then, as negotiations were starting, Change Healthcare went offline. And in early March, Mo got a tip. The clinic and United, they were going to make an end run around this process. She talked with an anonymous insider at the clinic who told her, turns out, all of the clinic's billing had been connected to Change.
So we're talking about just a calamitous cash crunch. Their revenue came to a standstill.
And by the time Mo's insider source learned what was up, this had all been going on for like 2 weeks.
This source said that Thursday, they all had a meeting and they were not sure they were going to be able to open their doors the following Monday.
That was Thursday, March 7th. The next day, March 8th, lawyers for Corvallis Clinic filed an application for an emergency exemption from the normal review process. A week later, they got that exemption, and this time, regulators had not demanded any conditions. So as Mo's story laid out, United's problem, the Change Healthcare hack, became everybody's problem, including Corvallis. And that problem seemed to have become United's opportunity to gobble up the practice without having to agree to any conditions from pesky regulators. And a postscript to the Corvallis Clinic story. Shortly after regulators approved the deal, United sent notices to thousands of patients at another clinic it had taken over in nearby Eugene. Those notices said basically, "We don't have a doctor for you anymore. Goodbye. Good luck." News reports said that clinic had lost more than 30 doctors since United took over. And incidentally, among the public comments that had urged regulators to kibosh the Corvallis Clinic deal, a bunch of people cited lousy experiences at that Eugene clinic under United's ownership. And this is the kind of thing that Mo Tasek and her colleagues at the American Economic Liberties Project and what's become a kind of anti-monopoly movement want to change. And here's where this episode becomes maybe just a little less of a horror story and maybe a little more of an action movie. Because the anti-monopoly movement has gotten a big backer in the last few years, the Biden administration. In 2017, a woman named Lina Khan made a name for herself in legal circles when she published a paper arguing that Amazon had become exactly the kind of super dominant company that antitrust laws were designed to constrain. Lina Khan was a law student when she published that paper. In 2021, Joe Biden appointed her to lead the Federal Trade Commission. The FTC and the Department of Justice split the job of antitrust enforcement, and they've both become super aggressive. They've filed big lawsuits against Google, Amazon, and in March of this year, Apple. And they've gotten a fair amount of attention. As we were writing up this episode, Jon Stewart interviewed Lina Khan on The Daily Show. And here's how she described her approach in that conversation.
We've really focused on how are companies behaving. Are they behaving in ways that suggest they can harm their customers, harm their suppliers, harm their workers, and get away with it? And that type of too big to care type approach right. is really what ends up signaling that a company has monopoly power because they can start mistreating you, but they know you're stuck.
Earlier this year, the Wall Street Journal reported that Lina Khan's allies, antitrust folks at the Department of Justice, were investigating United. Neither the Justice Department nor United has commented on that report, meaning nobody's denied it. So far, some of the Biden administration's antitrust lawsuits have panned out. Some haven't. Actually, in 2021, the Justice Department sued to prevent United Health Group from buying Change Healthcare. So that one they lost. But when they sued to block Penguin Random House from buying another giant publisher, Simon & Schuster, they won. And as Lina Khan told Jon Stewart, she and her colleagues aren't just suing to prevent mergers. They also sued to get infamous pharma bro Martin Shkreli banned for life from the pharma trade. And they won. And they're looking at other ways that big companies, especially in healthcare, screw with people.
Just to give you one example, inhalers. They've been around for decades,
sure,
but they still cost hundreds of dollars. So our staff took a close look and we realized that some of the patents that had been listed for these inhalers were improper. They were bogus. And so we sent hundreds of warning letters around these patents. And in the last few weeks, we've seen companies delist these patents. And three out of the four major manufacturers have now said within a couple of months, they're going to cap how much Americans pay to just $35.
I think we should start paying a lot more attention to what Lina Khan and her colleagues are up to and what their chances are. I've started reading up and getting in touch with folks who are in this fight and who are watching it. Because this is looking like the kind of action movie I kind of like. Meanwhile, I am posting a link to John Stewart's interview with Lena Khan wherever you're listening to this. I have a few other links for you in our newsletter. You can sign up for that at armandalegshow.com/newsletter. And I'll catch you in a few weeks. Till then, take care of yourself. This episode of An Arm and a Leg was produced by me, Dan Weissman, with help from Emily Pisacreta, and edited by Ellen Weiss. Big thanks this time to the novelist, journalist, and activist Cory Doctorow, who has been writing about the antitrust revival for years, breaking down complex technical stories in clear, accessible ways. Thanks to Professor Spencer Waller from the Loyola University Chicago Law School for talking about antitrust with me, and thanks to Dr. John Santa in Oregon for sharing material he got via public records request to the state and for his observations. Adam Raimonda is our audio wizard. Our music is by Dave Weiner and Blue Dot Sessions. Gabrielle Healy is our managing editor for Audience. She edits the First Aid Kit newsletter. B. Bosco is our consulting director of operations. Sarah Balma is our operations manager. An Arm and a Leg is produced in partnership with KFF Health News. That's a nonprofit newsroom producing in-depth journalism about healthcare in America. And it's a core program at KFF, an independent source of health policy research, polling, and journalism. Zach Dyer is senior audio producer at KFF Health News. He's editorial liaison to this show. And thanks to the Institute for Nonprofit News for serving as our fiscal sponsor, allowing us to accept tax-exempt donations. You can learn more about INN at inn.org. Finally, thanks to everybody who supports this show financially. You can join in anytime at armandalegshow.com/support. Thanks for pitching in if you can. And thanks for listening.